What's an antichrist?
Ian says he replaces, or Kyle said we replace the Christ.
But what's the Christ?
Some old concept that printing press ruined.
So if you're anti-concept of the printing press ruin, you're antichrist?
Yes.
Oh.
If you replace it, are you going to replace it, Brian?
Replace what?
The printing press version of the antichrist.
I'm not going to replace it, Bob. That's for the little ones to iron out.
Brian's going to get through this whole decade with an ionic vocabulary. If he didn't have this vocabulary, he'd be as inarticulate as he used to be when he called into cash flow before Ion. You had no words back then, Brian. I remember that.
You know what it was, Bob? It was pictures, images. I had images. I tried to put words to images.
Mm.
Have you ever heard the phrase, a picture is worth a thousand words? It's like you have this image in your mind and you want to talk about it, but then it's like, well, there's so many words to describe the image that you don't even get the words out, and you're on to the next image, and then you just...
You didn't notice the medium you were communicating. It was an acoustic medium, radio. That does not apply there. Words are worth a thousand images on the radio. Got that?
You're
talking out of context.
Well, okay, so explain your phrase. Words are worth a thousand images. Does that mean when someone speaks words and others hear it, it produces thousands of images from thousands of individuals?
Yeah, I like that. That's good. And if you come on there and don't say any words, you can hope the ESP is picking it up, but may not be usually happening, so then you're creating dead air. A picture's worth a thousand words when maybe you're painting or maybe a movie or photograph, but not on radio. It's the other way around. A word is worth a thousand pictures.
Since you brought this up, it reminds me of what you used to say all the time, and I want to challenge your statement. We're talking about angels, and you make the statement that we're greater than angels, or we're super angels because of, you know, we can talk on the phone and be everywhere all at once.
Yeah,
well,
like media. Yeah.
Can't an angel talk on the phone and do the same thing?
They probably could.
How do you know there's not angels on your show every week talking to you, Bob? Come on.
Would they go through a person?
That's possible, Brian, what you're saying, but I don't know how it's done. Or I maybe could tell us how, if they can or whatever. But unless they speak, we don't hear them.
I mean, Ion has mentioned many situations of people encountering angels, but the angels are just in the form of what people would say another person. So that other person could, you know, talk on the phone, be in a radio station and be broadcasting on air or...
Brian, I never said that as if I said it. I was always quoting McLuhan. I thought it was an important point to perceive the incredible discomfort. No. To understand how we're super angels, I would say that to erase the old image of angels that people had. So it was a way of updating what angels might be able to do if we can outdo the old image of angels. Ion has maybe introduced and updated the real image of angels.
It's almost as if, let's just say hypothetically, that McLuhan knew somehow that human creators were greater than angels, so he had to put it in a way that would some way, somehow, maybe get people there.
Wyndham Lewis wrote a novel about this.
Mm-hmm.
The Chaldermass is part one, and there's two more parts. In the novels, the later parts, parts two and three, the angels are pissed off at the electric environment. This is what Wyndham Lewis proposed. So the angels went to Hollywood and took over Hollywood. So basically the angels were forced to come in and take over the media environment. Ion said on McLuhan of Maui that Lewis was the only one to deal with the angels, and Ion was right about that. Wyndham Lewis knew that electric media was altering our relationship to angels. So then McLuhan added to that by pointing out, well, most people think angels are great, they can be here, there, and everywhere, but we actually as humans have superseded that old image of angels, and we can be everywhere at once. Now, what McLuhan said about it after, you know, what? Okay, so that means that we're greater than angels? I don't know. We didn't ask him. He was just trying to update the image of the angel and show that the angels have to change to the new development. So if he was saying that we're greater than the angels, and most Catholics believe angels were greater than us, so he was saying, well, the angels can't be the old type of angel, because to be greater than us, they have to be more than everywhere like we are. So right. Those were some of the thoughts that I think McLuhan was prompting and where they came from. And I personally don't have an opinion. You know that. I don't have an opinion. I just quote other people.
It's interesting now, since it's been brought out like that. I mean, that's what I think. I'm thinking, if anything, McLuhan is just trying to get people to at least entertain the thought that, look, you're not less than an angel. You're greater than an angel.
He might have been doing that, but he was really trying to show people that their images of events in the world were really rearview mirror.
Right.
For example, I know that all the images I have of last, 100 years are nowhere near the images that Barbara's boy has. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We really have a huge gap between the young kids, what their experiential imagery is compared to ours.
Or it could be that he's saying, well, most people have this concept of angels being these great, powerful beings. And it could be he's just making that concept to get people to think, look how powerful the electronic environment is. What I'm saying here is how powerful the electronic environment is that you're engaging in. This electronic environment is so powerful that it makes you a super angel.
But, so I agree with that. That's at least part of his agenda, at least that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to show how powerful we were with our extensions, and our old images don't even approximate what power is. That's why I say read McLuhan and Finnings Wake to understand what the phrase taking your power back is. Because you've got a lot of old traditional images of power.
Give me some good examples of what power is based on Finnegan's Wake and what was the other?
McLuhan. Take McLuhan.
So give me some examples of power based on McLuhan and Finnegan's Wake.
Well, McLuhan is easier because he puts it into English.
Okay.
He takes all the puns. So he would point out that in the 1560s, before pay TV, the television, the three networks in America, were billion-dollar service environments that anybody had relatively free access to, other than a couple of pennies, whatever you were charged for, rent to be in a place or something. But you could go live in Grand Central Station and watch TV. He said, here's this immense service that's available for everybody, and a billionaire, or back then a millionaire, couldn't buy a TV station and have just programming for themselves. The billionaire has to mingle with everybody else and watch Ed Sullivan and watch what's on. So we're all a new form of leveled field, the old image of communism. We were communists in the software environment, is what McLuhan said. And so he said, what are we fighting against communists per se out there in Asia when we're the most communistic nation in the world if you look at our experience and the environments we engage in that are relatively free?
Well, I would say that everybody on the call, based on that, everybody would say, well, all people in the 20th century, let's say, are more powerful, based on what you just said, because of the technologies, than what people were in the 19th and 18th century, because they just didn't have, you know,
and
all of the technology.
Let me add to that, Brian. I've said the electric environment, it rips apart the veil. Well, many hours ago, I think Roxanna heard it, Ian confirmed that, quote, again. We got back into that point, and I defined the question, and he said, yes. That means that the electric environment is causing the guff to be emptied, and that's why the world's population expanded over the last 100 years, and that's why there's many people here from other worlds and all that, and people from the guff. That's what the electric environment did. And McLuhan intuited that. He was saying no civilization has had this kind of amazing electronic environment. And on the level of non-physical and the guff, we have Ion telling us, yes, McLuhan's right. It even affected us. I even had to get a job and start coming forth and speaking.
McLuhan also talked a lot about being in the occult and ESP.
He considered that we were possessed by the Antichrist for many years already. So where does that place the Bible thing, the Revelations? And he said the Antichrist was a great electric engineer, master of software and hardware. That's how he defines the Antichrist. First of all, he quotes the Bible, the prince of the air, and you know electric media is on air, so he had an update of the phrase from the Bible, prince of the air, and then he added more words. He said, a great electric engineer, master of hardware and software. That's the Antichrist, or the prince of the air, or Lucifer. Maybe theologically the Antichrist is a subset of Lucifer, you know. You might get into arguments about that, but the prince of the air, he defined it that way.
The prince of the air being the electronic environment, or
yes,
the creator?
Yeah.
Okay.
The air would just refer to the electronic environment.
And we just established that when people engage that electronic environment, which he's calling the Antichrist, is actually everybody becoming more powerful.
That's a good way to look at it. Not the way he meant it, people, and he may have meant it differently, but he meant the cliche way. He said that the electric discarnate state where we're all merged in this electronic membrane, he said, was a fake simulation of the mystical body of Christ. So to the degree that the Antichrist is not good and not the Christ, we were living in a simulation of Christ.
That's like an interesting statement right there.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you look at how movies and TV and music, how it programs people, influences them, it changes society, the way we think, the way we behave in relationships, or not even have relationships anymore, or lack of morals, all of that. I mean, it can, you look at it as a Lucifer way, or how these people become famous, and they say
Barbara,
sell their souls
to
the devil.
It is immoral if you use the old Gutenberg values. McLuhan didn't use value judgments because he said that they were too apocalyptic, and these changes, that how could he morally condemn millions of people involved in them? He just wanted people to technically understand the questions. But I may not say that the Gutenberg values are accurate and that kind of morality is real. It doesn't seem to me that Ion says that. But Ion would say that trying to make the values of Christianity apply to society is a problem. Or Ion is totally different to what we do either way. You know,
we're talking about coming into your place of power, and we're establishing that coming into your place of power is engaging the electronic environment. Now, in the 21st century, Ion has now come forth. So is that what Ion means by come back into your place of power, or is it that plus more, or is it something else? Or
here's something else, Brian. A year ago or so, Ion pointed out that the phrase to take your power back was to get a Coldplay box. So that's included. That's
okay,
like
that's
Sheila's painting. You know, remember Sheila's painting and supposedly has the guy sitting on his throne, he's got his Coldplay perfect environment. So yeah, taking your power back is literally, in relation to oil consciousness, is getting your Coldplay box. So that
it's
was
included,
a new dimension.
But it's not the whole thing, though.
Yes, not the whole thing. Maybe I would say taking your power back on the biggest, deepest level is you don't even require Coldplay.
Or just to know your God.
Or to live it and raise people from the dead every day. That's the marker point. When you can start raising people from the dead, you're on the level of ascension that Ion's recommending.
Ion said you're teaching us how to speak. That's, I think, one of the important things, this example of angels, all these archetypes of the angel or the heaven and the clouds and the thunders, all these metaphors in the Bible, what Ion is explaining as their real meaning is totally different from what we thought for millennia.
And remember, it's only a short time for the printing press. So for millions of years, thousands of years, some huge number, people didn't have the images we have. They had other images.
For example, hell was invented by Dante.
So the printing press came along and pretty well got the world on the same page. Not everybody, but a big chunk of humanity for the first time was put on the same page. You could say that's overcoming the confusing part of the Tower of Babel. So we rebuilt Babel, a tower, and has it been dismantled or has it caused confusion yet? People would say today there is confusion and fragmentation, but during the Gutenberg galaxy, everybody's on the same page. But Ion would say that's not a good thing to get everybody on the same page.
It's like it creates this huge conformity.
Ion says, like McLuhan, that the printing press was the Dark Age. And he's saying that to people who consider the Bible the most important artifact. A printed book.
You know when he's saying, take your power back, and then we put our power in the box, you know, the Ark of the Covenant. But were these people, how were they powerful if they were slaves in Egypt?
Well, when they had the opportunity to get their power out in the desert, they rejected it and wanted to go back to Egypt. Mm-hmm. And what did Moses do? He said, no, you're stuck here. Half of them destroyed themselves, you know, ate the burning gold and all that. And then those left wandered around, and they found the promised land. And that was a new condition that they had to learn to live in. And that was to help them get their power. But Ion would say that they had more power in Egypt in relation to their desires. They didn't like the wandering in the desert, so they were pissed off. So they romanticized the past condition. I don't know if Ion ever said that they had more power in Egypt. No, they didn't. They just, comparing the Egypt life, seemed to be better than in the desert.
When did they lose their power from the beginning? I mean, was it the fallen state of man, and then they had a chance to get their power back, and then they put it in a box, so they didn't really...
No, it goes back to the Samaritans and the fall. The Samaritans were the closest to the ascended state. They were a fallen state, but they were closer to the ascended state. They still had some of the knowledge of, in scholarship they talk about the Golden Age is way back there somewhere. So I don't think scholars think of it our way, but that would be back there in Samaritan times. They had pretty good deal going. It was relatively a happy situation. But they were starting to enjoy themselves, make new technologies, and they didn't know that each technology would trap them even more and start to fall greater down in the rabbit hole. So we got to the very bottom.
What technologies are you referring to back then?
Writing, speaking. They lost their ESP.
Well, that's what they lost, but you're saying technologies, that, because we just got through saying, well, with the electronic environment and these technologies, we're actually becoming more powerful. So I'm just trying to clarify.
People wanted to have new experiences. They extended themselves to the technologies. The Ark was a major marker point of creating an outer technology that you relied on to give you some kind of security. You weren't relying on your inner resources anymore.
With the technologies and the drugs and the art, we were trying to retrieve the knowing and the expanded perception we had before the fall.
Yeah, but you're talking about today.
I'm talking about the whole technologies.
Okay, there always was drugs. Yeah, you could say that. But what was the question that Ion gave Judges 6 to? It was a basic question you asked last week.
Why did he finally came to explain what the Bible
This is this is really good.
Now.
This is a new answer. She asked, why did Ion come now? He goes, Judges 6. You go read Judges 6, it's a world, Israel, totally devastated. The land is polluted. It's totally a very bad situation. And that's our time now. Desolation on many levels, and that's why Ion came forth. So we actually had a pretty good connection there with a Bible quote.
Well, that's interesting, because I remember when Ion first came on, that's what people were ranting and raving about. What about the fucking chemtrails? What about the poisons and the toxins? Fucking every time Ion's like, there is no poisons, there are no toxins, blah, blah, blah. So that doesn't make sense to me that now he's flipping back to, you guys were so poisonous and toxic, I had to come forth.
Okay, Brian, here's the answer to that. We thought the world was poisoned. Our concepts interpreted everything that way. Our knowledge led us to think it was devastation. So when the Bible in Judges 6 describes the devastation, that's interpreted by humans. It's written down. It doesn't mean that was the fact, right? Ion came to clear up that confusion.
But you just said Israel's devastated now.
Many people think it is.
What does he say about the whole situation between Obama and Netanyahu? I mean, Netanyahu is coming over here to speak to the Joint Congress in session, and Obama didn't even know about it. This is the first time ever this has ever happened.
I never asked Diane about it, but it either means how irrelevant the White House is or how irrelevant Israel is. There's many different ways to interpret it. Or then you can go on the online websites, find out the fucking aliens took over the White House, blah, 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 you know, some scenario. But for us, it's not significant at all. I'll say who to both cases. We don't talk about this stupid stuff like that with Ion too much.
No, but it's, we're talking about Israel, though. So isn't it like part of that? Isn't it significant involving Judges 6, like you just said?
No. Israel is a spiritual condition. Ion said that the Bible is talking to Israel, and that's whoever will become a member of that reality, not the geopolitical entity of Israel. He has said that. Which I think Protestantism says, different parts of Protestants say that. They talk about Israel is not the geographical place. It is
Isn't Israel all about the DNA, the 144,000? That's what the 12 tribes were all about.
Yeah.
The 12 tribes were the whole process of going from 144,000, and it all went dormant to where we're down to fucking one. One double healing. But this whole Israel thing of, I see your point, Barbara, but you go to the Israel that's here and now geographically over in the Middle East and the chaos. But to me, when I read about Israel in the Bible, it's about what's happening to the 144,000 double helix strands.
Brian, the Samaritans, they had 120,000 type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and to me, as those 144,000 go dormant, there's a lot of fucking torment. And,
well, you start aging, which Ryan says is very hard to do.
And that's what all these battles are about. I mean, Ion breaks it down chemically all the time. Everything comes down to, you know, it gets down to the molecular, atomic, subatomic. It gets into specific gravity,
pico,
and all this, and then this is extrapolated in the Bible as this great fucking war, and there's blood and guts all over the fucking planet, and it's like, oh, well, that's this molecular bond, you know, when it got fucking broke down and blah, 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 and it's like, okay.
Yeah, so did we answer that? Do you have any more questions about McLuhan and angelization? Have you guys heard this greatest statement, how no one can be guilty of anything today under electric conditions? Did you hear McLuhan say that?
No one can be guilty?
Yeah, I didn't quite understand how that can be.
Yeah,
what exactly was the content of his statement?
He was talking about the book In Cold Blood. About 1966, Truman Capote wrote about these couple of teenagers who went on a rampage and killed people, back when people didn't expect youth to do that. Truman Capote wrote a book about the details of these kids' lives and what happened to them. So we begin the recording where McLuhan says, well, people wondered if those kids really did it or this and that. And he said, one reviewer, famous reviewer, Kenneth Tynan, said that Capote killed the people, not the two kids. So that's a facetious remark. But, of course, McLuhan takes a facetious remark and shows the truth in it. McLuhan says it's better to say the reader killed the people because we're so merged under electric conditions. There's no private identity, no private will or agency. So therefore, you might as well say you did it. If you're going to judge that Capote did, you must include the possibility that the reader did it. And that leads into his idea that you did do it and that it's a world of you done it, not who did it, because there's no individual who did it.
But
you go all the way to Moses' Ten Commandments, and it's thou shalt not do it. You cannot do it.
You can't do it. This is what you're saying. McLuhan's words are ionic, but he doesn't mean what we know the tablets say. I assume he doesn't know. But his words get very close to it. So let me just play it. Now that I've spelled out, you know, what it is, I'll just play it. You can hear him run through it for a couple minutes.
Now, the safety car is somewhat in that way related to In Cold Blood. In Cold Blood, as you know, some of the reviewers have been puzzled. They figure that whodunit means probably Capote did it. Because Kenneth Tynan, you see, his figures that the murderer was the author. Alternatively, the reader. It's one of the two. Now, remember when King Oedipus set out to discover who done it? some evil had been done in his kingdom, and he was determined to find out who'd done it, and he found out soon enough he had done it. In any highly involved, intricate feedback network, it is impossible to say, he done it, I saw him, get him. In an electric society where everybody affects everybody at the same moment, it is impossible any longer to say, he done it. It's just as realistic to say, I did it. So, again, at instant speeds of involvement of people in people, not only is there no possibility of assigning guilt for the things that people formerly had legalistically assigned guilt, there is also the difficulty of even knowing who we are. That is, personal identity becomes a real problem. The big headache of our time, existentially and so on, is who am I? How do you know who you really are? Well, the existentialists are simply responding to electric circuitry. After centuries of wheel and slow movement, if you move suddenly into the dimension of instant electric circuits, the problem of who I am or who we are becomes a serious one. Because identity had for centuries been assigned to the matter of classification. I am a Hungarian, I am a dentist, I have six kids. That was identity. 50 years ago, people could be sure of who they were that way. Today, that no longer serves as human identity.
So, to me, that's pretty clear. He's saying that the six degrees of separation can't be applied anymore. Visual space can't be applied anymore. And since everybody's affecting everybody, you can't find the original impulse that resulted in a particular event. And that's technically, the more you look at that, that's true. We're so involved, and people can talk to so many people on the phone back then, and all kinds of information are coming at people. Who knows what they're affected by?
Bob, was he talking about taking accountability?
Yes. And he actually said, nobody can take accountability. We have merged, he called it an interactive feedback network.
Yeah, but he preferenced that to a specific type. It's right there at the end of your recording. He said, now this is basically coming from, someone from that just does the electronic something. He's not talking about everybody. He's saying this comes from...
Under electronic conditions. Yeah. When there's electric media in the society, this is what the society instantly has to respond to and live with. So McLuhan would say back then, that's why capital punishment went out of favor. People, by default, unconsciously started to notice there's this more interactive causes, and therefore it isn't applicable to kill someone for it. Now, later, capital punishment tried to come back, and that's because of a different media environment in the 80s and 90s. But we're talking about the black and white TV, color TV of the 50s and 60s. You know, it's a different medium. Everybody was in this one little melted pot, discarnately, electrically, super angels in a membrane. That changed institutions. He used to quote the criminal when the guy was carried off to jail. He said, society did this to me. They quote sociology. You know, some criminal would say, I didn't do this. Society did it to me. That would be the popular, semi-informed understanding of what McLuhan's saying precisely.
Then it just turned into a fucking scapegoat. It was never anybody's fault. It was, well, my child abuse made me do it, or, you know, it was my family, or it was my friend.
Right.
Or it's the books I read, or the movies I watched, or... the songs I listened to, that's what it was. It was that fucking Metallica song.
It's the victim's fault.
That's what
I wanted to die.
Okay, so you had people in the 70s, in the me decade, Werner Erhard started making them say, no, stop blaming other people, take responsibility for yourself. And some people will say, well, that's ionic. That's one tiny part of ion, and ion takes it further. Then in the 80s and 90s, you had political correctness, where individuals weren't individuals anymore, so the group mind took over. So it was one group blaming another group. So it's called the culture wars, the racism, you know, racism is big in America. That was the group mind effect. Then you get into the internet, where nobody can affect anybody, and you're all in your own reality. So at that point, the victim is the cause. You caused it. The victim caused it. So this phase is under different media environments. The ions come in to try to clarify at all levels what's going on. And when Ion says, you can't kill anybody, according to Moses' tablets, isn't it interesting that McLuhan kind of gets you closer there? I say that McLuhan's statements are the closest by human being about our situation that Ion says is the real situation. And McLuhan wrote his PhD on the grammarian tradition, and they believed that words were alive. They weren't the logical scientist philosopher types that didn't think words were alive, just something that you could build a mechanical science around. So the grammarians, they were close to Ion, ionically. They were the side that said, no, your words matter. The nominalists said, and that comes in with Abelard and Heloise and a few other philosophers, the nominalists say, no, an object can be called anything. There's no connection between the word and the object. That was the nominalists. They took over at the time of the printing press, because the printing press enhanced detached view because it enhanced the eye. When the electric age of involvement came in beyond visual space, then the grammarian idea of language came back.
Well, and the Bible speaks a lot about words and how they have the power. And Ion is saying the same thing.
The fathers were grammarian rhetoricians, the patristic fathers. They were not dialecticians. They understood dialectics. They understood pagan mythology. But their whole statement, especially St. Augustine, was the grammarian rhetorical tradition that McLuhan spells out in his PhD.